Good evening, everyone. Nice to see those of you who ha I haven't seen for 2 weeks. Others, two of the others I was with last week, so I've seen them, but nice to see you all. Throughout the sitting, I had a cat on my lap. And then as soon as the bell rings, she jumps off and runs away. This is like a Zen cat, which was a gift. She was a gift from the Sangha, so maybe that's to be expected. And it's a challenge to have my meditation period be, well, it's different than if I didn't have a cat on my lap, let's say. And I have to let go of how I want it to be, whatever. So today, this morning, I thought of that when I woke up. I thought of this quote that, I think it might have been Claudia because it came from Plum Village, but, to one of the Thich Nhat Hanh's meditation practice. He has like slogans for meditation, for medit practice in daily life. And this quote is the one about when you wake up. And so I had always only known the first two lines of it, which are waking up this morning, I smile. 24 brand new hours are before me. So those are the first two lines. And I remember that from, I think maybe I had heard it before, and then I'm pretty sure it was Claudia who told us this or someone. And then I think of it, and I thought of it this morning when I woke up. And so I looked it up. I wanted to look it up and see what where it came from, if what the other slogans were for the other activities during the day. And I came upon the last two lines of this slogan, which I didn't know about. So after it says, 24 brand new hours are before me, the next line is, I vow to live fully in each moment. But it's the last line that really struck me, and to look at all beings with eyes of compassion, which if you just hear the first two lines, okay, I'll look at all these. This is, 24 hours ahead of me, new. What shall I do? And then even the third line, I vow to live each moment fully. Yeah, okay. But then the last line, and to look at all beings with eyes of compassion. That changes everything about this quote. This makes it a real bodhisattva vow. And so as when I found this, and I don't remember what the other, there were like activities for, there were slogans for like when you turn on the lights, when you walk. I don't remember what the other ones were. I didn't really pay much attention. I was interested in this one. And apparently that last line comes from the Lotus Sutra, which it's really long and elaborate, and at some point maybe we can study it in our study group, but for the moment, it seems like too big of a thing for us to delve into. Debbie maybe studied it with Donna in the study group. I don't know. No, she didn't. Okay. I guess it was longer ago that they did it. In any case, this line comes from the Lotus Sutra. And it's talking about Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva of Compassion, Kanzeon, these different names we have for it. And the line is, eyes of loving kindness look on all living beings. And this really changes what that note, that slogan of Thich Nhat Hanh's is. It's not just about me waking up smiling, oh, a wonderful day, 24 hours, what do I do? It's not even, oh, I will live every moment fully. It's this added to look at all beings with eyes of compassion. So I started thinking about this. So it really was filling me all day long. And I, you know, so many examples came to mind. Yesterday, I had several things to do, and so I rode quite a bit in the metro, in the Paris subway. And it was about lunchtime. No, it was 11 in the morning. I had a meeting that I had to go to, and it wasn't really crowded, the metro, but it was crowded enough so that there were no extra seats. And I was sitting in one of the places where there's four seats. And at one station, the other three people got up. And so I was sitting there and there were three empty seats. And these two grandparents with their grandchildren got on, two grandchildren, who were maybe like 4 and 6 or something. And they came towards where I was sitting, and the boy who was about 6 sat next to me. And the grandmother wanted the little girl who was about 4 to sit on her lap next to the window and have the grandfather sit across from me. And the little girl would have none of it. No way. She was like pushing the grandma away. She was kicking, you know, she was like, she wanted her own seat. And the grandmother was like really nervous because there were a lot of people and I was sitting there. And I could see, I looked upon these beings with compassion. And compassion for the little girl, compassion for the grandmother, compassion for the grandfather who was also like nervous and was going to have to stand up, right? So, which would have been fine. I think he was happy to do that. So I stood up and I said to the grandfather, I kind of lied. I was getting off in 2 or 3 stations, but I said, I'm getting off soon so you can have my seat. Because I think if I had just said, you can have my seat, he probably would have said no. So I said, I'm getting off soon, you can have my seat. And he was very grateful and he said, oh, thank you very much. And I could see that the grandmother was relieved because she was nervous that the little girl was going to kick me or, you know, create a scene in like, you know, disrupt the peaceful sitting area there. And I had compassion for the little girl because, you know, it's like almost lunchtime. She's probably, it's school holidays here, so she's stuck with her grandparents or she's missing her mother or who knows what happened. You know, she was not happy, in other words. So I had compassion for her too. So I just stood up and gave the guy my seat and it was like no problem for me whatsoever. 2 stations later, I got off and that was the end of it. And I thought, oh, you know, this is interesting. I was looking with the eyes of compassion, and it's not what we usually think. So then later, I was taking care of my grandson in the afternoon, and I took him to the park in a stroller. And then once we get to the park, of course, I let him out of the stroller and he runs wild. And, you know, after 1.5 hours, it was time to leave. And he started, I was going to put him in the stroller, but before I could, he escaped and started running towards the gate of the park, this big gate, onto a sidewalk and then a street, you know. So, and he was running, he's 2 years old, right? And he's like running away from me. Because I don't think he was thinking in his head he was running away from me. He was running towards the exit. He likes to run. It's, you know, he hates to go in the stroller. And so I was, you know, calling to him, stop, stop. Forget that, you know. And finally, you know, dragging the stroller because it had my bag on it and our coats. It was a beautiful afternoon. Our coats, everything. I couldn't just leave the stroller sitting there. So I was dragging the stroller and I caught up to him right as he passed through the gate. And I grabbed him like by the by the sweatshirt like this, really fiercely, and said to him, "Stop," very severely, "stop. When I say stop, you stop." No, I said, "When Nana says stop," I'm Nana, so Nana says stop, you stop. And this was a compassionate gesture. Compassion is not always like, "Oh, sweet, you can have my seat, sir," so that, this was of, this was like fury compassion, because he, I didn't want him to run into the street. And he needed to know that you don't do that. Course, once he stopped and kind of looked at me like, uh-oh, I could let go of his, my grip and just calmly tell him, "You can't run out there in the street. You have to wait for me. You have to stop when I say stop." And surprisingly enough, he accepted with no fuss to go into the stroller, which usually it's a big ordeal. So I'm thinking, when don't I do that? Because certainly I'm thinking of examples when I do look at all beings with the eyes of compassion. When don't I, you could maybe think of someone who's not doing what you want them to do, but not, a grandson, but, this morning, kind of, I didn't really get angry, but I'm at the supermarket where they have the checkout, self-checkout, so it's quicker because there's usually lines at the regular checkout. And I came up there and they were all full, and there was a thing pulled across saying that they were closed. But there were people at all of the self-checkout stations there. And this thing pulling off with a sign that it was closed. And the woman who was supervising, I said to her, so it's closed?" And she said, Yes, it's closed." And then turned away and started doing something else. What? Why are all these people here doing their groceries and it's closed for me? For me, right? For me. So, okay, I waited a few minutes, nothing happened, went to the checkout, huge long line. And then I turned around and looked, and suddenly there were people entering the self-checkout area. So I came back, gathered up my things, went back, and not very happy, started doing my thing. And then when the woman came by, I said, "So it was closed?" And before I could get angry or anything, she said, "Oh yeah, I was having trouble with the machine and I was waiting for my supervisor. And then when I opened it up, I looked around and I didn't see you." Wow. That cut right through my uncompassionate story that I was going to probably say to her, So maybe was she looking at me with eyes of compassion, which helped me to then see her with eyes of compassion. Oh, wow. She was having trouble with the machines and she was waiting for her supervisor. She didn't have time to explain. And why should she even have to explain? Although it was pretty weird. So instead of just like for the rest of the day after this, I started looking at things in that way, Instead of just waking up and thinking, "Oh, I have 24 hours ahead of me, I should live them fully," it was, and look at all beings with eyes of compassion. And it reminded me of during our retreat, I talked, I don't remember which day, but I talked about how the modern mindfulness movement. Is, has become a way to what should I say, turn away from others and focus only on self. To, it's a way to sidestep the pain of the world. Rather than engaging with it. And you know, it goes pretty far. It's, you know, become it's become an instrument, a technique to make people be more productive and deal with the difficulties they have in their workplaces. This is especially when it's in a workplace or something, or you know, helps them cope rather than treating the symptom. It treats the symptom rather than treating the cause. You know, it's kind of like taking, you know, with say you break your leg, and they give you painkillers so it doesn't hurt without fixing your leg, right? And modern mindfulness has become that. It's been stripped of the fourth line of Thich Nhat Hanh's saying. Look upon others with eyes of compassion. It's a self involved. It's lost the commitment to go beyond self-interest, in other words. And you know, Thich Nhat Hanh was instrumental in introducing mindfulness to the West and presenting it in such a way that it did encourage people to engage with the world, see others with eyes of compassion. You know, his slogans say those kinds of things. And it was about waking up. It was a spiritual path. It was part of the spiritual path to realize unity, to see the other as oneself, and to engage with engaged Buddhism. In fact, Thich Nhat Hanh was at the core of that, using mindfulness as a technique for that. And then, you know, it's become clean, it's stripped of all of that. And focuses, you know, it does not dissolve or strip away the ego. It feeds it, you know. It doesn't, you know, it's like narcissism is built into it the way that it's used today. And you know, I'm really referring to, you know, when it's used to reduce stress, not only, but for medical uses, why not? But it's missing the spiritual aspect. And intentionally, it's presented that way because they don't want people to think it's a spiritual path. It's a tool to make them feel better. And employers, you know, like Google, all these big, you know, tech companies, they all have like meditation courses for their employees and mindfulness courses. And the example I s shared at the retreat was that Amazon even has like on their in their warehouses, they have these little cells, these little boxes where you can go watch a little 2-minute video, which shows you how to do a mindfulness practice. Have a 5-minute mindfulness practice and then close the door and go back out and continue your work. So that people will be less stressed, so that people will be less, so maybe they won't burn out, so that they can be more productive. Missing completely the, you know, seeing your neighbor with the eyes of compassion or seeing the cosmos with the eyes of compassion. It's to make you a better employee, a better servant or something. So when I saw this, when I saw that last line of that Thich Nhat Hanh quote, I was like, yes, of course. That's where Thich Nhat Hanh was going with it. And that's what's been stripped away. And so I think that's it's interesting for us to look at our practice as well. And when we are using it, you know, when we are trying to obtain or arrive, maybe look at that and see that, you know, the entire project, if there is one of our path, it's a spiritual path to awakening. To recognizing interdependence, impermanence, the nature of self, the nature of being. And it has a commitment to go beyond self-interest, you know. That's part of what we do. And in fact, that's what the Bodhisattva is, you know. And then when we see that, when we see the oneness, then we act differently. And this is where justice, compassion, well-being, that's where it arises. Yeah, I don't know, maybe Claudia, do you know the other quotes from him, from Thich Nhat Hanh, about the other activities? No, you don't either. Okay. There's like seven or something, I don't know, to help people in daily life. I know there was one about turning on lights and, like, you know, that light brings wisdom and ignorance is in darkness or something. I don't know. It's probably much more profound than that, but in any case. So if we look around and see people's behavior, we can immediately see when that last line is not present, you know. We can see in our own behavior as well when we're not seeing all beings with eyes of compassion. And all beings, well, that's not just human beings, right? And what does that mean, eyes of compassion? The Lotus Sutra one, it says, eyes of loving kindness look on all living beings. And that all living beings, you know, that helps us to overcome as well our dualistic ideas. When we say all, you know, like when we say sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them all. That sounds like a big project, but it's actually just this one right here. This one right here, and then you know, the little girl sitting across from me in the metro. I didn't have to give up my seat to the entire metro car, or do anything for anybody else there. I was right there. And then when I stood up, you know, there's a rush always to get out of the metro cars. And I don't remember if it was that train or another one yesterday when I was traveling. But so, of course, I'm involved in this rush to get out of the car, too, right? The train. And the guy ahead of me was slow. And normally, or it's a very human reaction, is to be annoyed because, well, everybody's pushing and hurrying to get out, and this guy's going really slowly. And because I was kind of just in the flow of it, I almost crashed into him. And then when I stepped out and I stepped aside, I saw that the guy, he had like a cane and was having difficulty walking, which then changes everything, right? But I don't even, he doesn't even need to have a cane and have difficulty walking. If I can have the eyes of compassion, I don't need to push him. I don't need to hurry. It's kind of a remembering, remembering, remembering. So, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh has the one about smiling at your cup of tea as well. He's big on smiles, right? So he has, you know, if you smile at your tea, It's your cup of tea. You're smiling at the clouds. You're smiling at the sun. You're smiling at the person who grew the tea plant. You're smiling at the rain. It's like this whole thing of what you're smiling at. You're smiling at the universe, at the cosmos, But that involves going beyond just being mindful and awakening to the interdependence of that, of all things. Which then leads to, looking at all beings with eyes of compassion. So maybe I will stop there and see if people have anything to share, ask.
It's interesting that you also gave the example of your grandchild and the need to be a little bit more tough with him as a means to show compassion. I always like these personal stories to illustrate this deep teaching, so, and to confront myself with that. This afternoon, normally I go to the library here. I like to spend the afternoon in the library. And sometimes it's very quiet, but sometimes there are, I guess high school pupils, adolescents that really don't know how to behave in a library. So many times I feel myself that I cannot say that I feel compassion. I start being irritated. And I don't know, you see, this is the ambiguous thing. Today I really had to say, shh. I really had to make a gesture and say, quiet down. So now you tell this story about the need to cultivate compassion, and there are so many ways of doing it. I don't know if I have been. I really felt need to, because the people that are around in the library, they don't care. I mean, that they sometimes these youngsters, they are not behaving properly. I mean, they have sometimes even the mobile phone on, and it goes. And then my neurotic aspect comes out. You see, this should be like a silent place where I want to read. So I don't know. You see, what I want to say with this is that also not to make a move and say, okay, the kind of more tough warning that somehow they should know where they are, and I don't know if this is part of compassion or not, but at least I think it's needed to make a movement to explain that this is not the playground, and in a way they are not only bothering me, they are bothering perhaps the other people. So this action between many things, between a neurotic reaction because they are bothering myself, my ego, and the fact that I think that is necessary to teach them, and the fact that out of that can also help them to be aware. There are many things here, see? So compassion, I don't know, it's maybe there are many layers. So that's what I want to share anyway.
Yes, I mean, that's a situation, that kind of situation, that situation precisely too, is common too, where we want to, we of course we're, we want to be helpful, we want to not be we don't want to hurt anyone or something. At the same time, we have our own desire for it to be quiet, although it is a place that's supposed to be quiet, you know. So, in keeping with the situation, in another situation, maybe not. If they were, if you were sitting in the school, in a park around the fountain or something, and they were making noise, we no, then you would not say, please, shh. But given the context, given the situation and, all the different elements, maybe it is a compassionate act to do that. Thing is, there is no set, it's not black and white, as you say. There's many different things going on. And we can see, well, is this really about me wanting it to have my way? And that might be too okay. My way with my grandson was I wanted him to not run away into the street. That's true, but there was something else too. I wanted that for his sake, as well as for mine and my daughter and for whatever. But it's tricky. And as you say, it's important to look at, well, what is your neurotic part in this? And then they often can overlap. But given the situation, then the other elements, well, then you say, okay, well, it's appropriate because this is a place of supposed to be quiet. So I don't know. There's no set. It's a
No,
good
no,
question.
this is just to say that it's not here. How you say that in English, clear cut, or there is an expression for that. To be compassion can be manifested in different ways, and
Absolutely.
I don't want to say that I was feel, but I felt really the need to make a move there and explain, not explain because I didn't talk with them. I just made sh I made a movement, and well, I was not really showing my fist or something. I was quiet. I just said please or something like that. I said shh. And they, in fact, they were silent after a while, and they left after a while. So, but that is this. Maybe I was bringing this example, just to, try to clarify how you can manifest compassion, or in between, you can manifest also the need sometimes to just, bring some element of social education, which I don't know if it has to do with compassion. Maybe it has. I mean, in this case, obviously
Maybe.
it had.
And probably at their age, they know that the library is supposed to be silent. They know
All right,
that.
exactly.
And they're pushing the boundaries always, teenagers. So, thank you. Claudia.
Yeah, hello, everybody. I'm sorry because my computer went off battery, so maybe I missed something when I was off. Just it's not exactly relate. I think that it's not exactly related to what you are saying, but there is just for me the feeling that. How important was this little sentences like from Thich Nhat Hanh, the one you quote? I mean, just now, it was at one point of my life, it was very important, and I had to read it every morning. And this is just something that happened to me when I was doing the Jikido during the session. And it's, I was, for me, I was ringing the bell. So maybe you talk about that, and I talked to someone who is very used to the Thich Nhat Hanh village, Plum village, and he said, "So did you, are you, do you call the bell? Do you, est-ce que tu invites la cloche en français? To call the bell, I don't know if does it translate inviter la cloche, because inviter la cloche is really beautiful. Would you say to call the bell? To call the bell, or would you invite the bell?
You could invite, you could be invite, yeah.
Invite, okay. And he said, so he said, do you invite the bell this morning? Did you invite the bell this morning? And he was like, wow, something huge opened in front of me because I was just ringing the bell, you know. And when he said that, I said, wow, okay, I can invite the bell. And it really switched. So I know it comes from village, and it really switched all my gesture after all, because every time I was inviting the bell, it really transformed everything from there. So I just maybe you talk about that when it cuts.
We did not talk about that. That's beautiful.
What
Debbie?
does it mean to invite the bell? I don't understand.
Claudia could maybe
Oh,
answer.
yes. I didn't hear you, Debbie.
What does invite the bell
But
mean?
because Thich Nhat Hanh is saying that when you don't ring the bell, but you invite the bell to come in the
Okay.
silence.
Okay. Thank you.
If I can say something linked to that, is what is very interesting is just before to come to Plum Village, to come to the session, I was finishing my project about Pierre Boulez, and I had this beautiful interview from a musician talking about the silence before music, and he was saying that the music begins in the silence, that he was saying that the silence is part of the music. It has to The music begins in the silence, and the music is inviting herself in the silence. So it's kind of related to what Thich Nhat Hanh is saying about the bell, that okay, there is something.
And actually, from the absolute point of view, from the oneness point of view, sound and silence are not separate. And so that joins, it's going in that sense there. And I can imagine for you, inviting the bell is very different than striking the bell. Just in your being with it, I'm sure that's very different, right? I mean, yeah. We treat the bell differently then, right?
It really, I mean, as a matter of fact, it really blows my mind. How do you say that? It was like, wow, okay. I was shocked. And you know, the linkin in the mor the linkin in the morning, it was very strong for that, because I was by myself in the night, you know, with the stars, and I was thinking I was ringing the inking, but it was the same, you know, like thinking that I was inviting the inking to wake you up. It was really, really strong. It was totally, I mean, that transformed totally the experience of doing what I was doing, that just this little question was like, wow, okay.
But even that too, you were inviting us
Inviting us.
to wake up.
No.
No.
And you know, I think that this is my I love to be Jikido. The only problem is not to wake up with the inking, because I think this is my favorite thing during the session. Just to, and I used to be very, very angry with people that put an alarm clock in the morning before the inking, because I cannot enjoy the being awakened by the inking, you know. I mean, being waking up by the inking more than awaken, but this is the only thing that I missed, that nobody is waking me with the waking me up with the inking.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, I was thinking that since being back and being in back into this hectic city, I've been in order to not become aggressive like everyone else. Yeah, I've been feeling this actually strong compassion for a lot of people and situations, and just seeing all the pain that leads everyone to act the way they do and the way I do too often, and being whoa, yeah, and feeling somehow, yeah, that compassion that you talk about, and what came up too was the fact I saw my brother, and my brother isn't always very well, and well, it didn't really happen recently, but we did sometimes. Well, there, you know, he needs to go to the hospital because he's not well, and you would think, well, that's tough, and that's putting someone in, you know, taking him away from his home and in a closed place, and but. Sometimes that's also what needs to be done out of compassion for the person and the suffering of the person. So it takes all different. Yeah, it's sometimes it's compassion is about can be. Violent is not the word, but hard or taking hard decisions or not doing something all smiling and flowering and whatever. But it's a fine line, and you need to be really connected to where the decision comes from, or. That's what came up for with compassion for me.
Yeah, that's the key is that, is this self-attached action, or is it self non-attached? No. And that's not always clear, as José Eduardo points out, and in the case of your brother too, because in a sense it's a relief for you too to not have him not have to take care of him or something, but is it there's also like you say, it's something for him. So it's not always clear, and yet that's the key. Where is that coming from? And if we look around us, we can really, it's really clear when it's not coming from a place of no self. When you see how people behave, you can really see when it's not about no self. Mean, you just look at Donald Trump, it's very clear that there's nothing compassionate and no self going on there.
And at the same time, without going so far, to me, very often it seems like distinguishing what I'm doing to be a good girl, and what I really want to do to be compassionate, and not get myself too caught up in being nice to be nice, sort of thing. In French, the expression that just makes me shiver with. No, disgust is too big a word, but I don't want to be a belle personne and get involved in action that I haven't really chosen because I can't resist trying to be nice. I know that's a trap for me. I mean, it's fine to be nice, but when it involves doing something that I really don't think I should be doing, then I'm not being nice. I'm just living up to an image that I would like people to think I am, which I am not.
Right, and that's an example of self-involved action, because when we have this image of who we want people to think we are or whatever, that's like totally self-involved. and gives rise to what some, maybe it's Bernie or someone who says stupid compassion, or maybe it's Trungpa. Maybe it's Shogyam Trungpa who says stupid compassion, where it's not really, enlightened. It's just doing what we les bonnes œuvres, or trying to be a belle personne, like you say, which is missing the point. But we certainly can recognize that in ourselves, right? We know when we do that.
Reminds me of a discussion when with Sylvain, who was at the retreat with us. Some of you might know her. She was a lot of the of us were got sick during the retreat, probably because of me and my cold, but maybe not, I don't know. And so there were a lot of people with a cold, and so there was Claudia and then Thiago and then Adrien and other people, and Sylvain is an acupuncture, so she went to do acupuncture to a lot of people, and at the end when she left, so I said, oh, you must be really tired because you went, you were spending a lot of your time helping others getting through their being sick. And she told me, I do that, and I try to only use it for emergency, and but I also look at why do I do it? Do I do it because I'm really out of the bodhisattva, and because that's where I need to be, or do I do it because I want to be a belle personne? And it was really interesting, and yeah, and I thought, well, we, why do? I said, yeah, I ask myself the same questions all the time when I'm doing whatever I'm doing. So anyway, it made me think of that, because in retreats also we, yeah, there are situations, and we had talked about it with Marjolaine too. Why do we do what we do?
Good. I only want to thank you to remember us of that, because we have so many situations where we can relate it, where we try to do the best, and then come something else from ourselves. And I only want to thank you to remember that, because today my English, it's confusing me, but it's important to reflect on that, what you say with Thich Nhat Hanh words.
Thank you. Yeah, there it's Thich Nhat Hanh, it's not me. So I'm just passing on what he said and how then I noticed it in my life and how we're all noticing it in our lives. Yeah.
You said that these words from him came from the Lotus Sutra, Lotus Sutra, right?
Yeah, Lotus. Yeah.
And that is a sutra that is at the basis of this line that the, I think, Pure Land Buddhists keep on saying, right?
Yeah, what is the line actually?
Yeah, is
Yeah.
this, I think, is Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, something like that.
Yeah, that's
That
Japanese.
comes from the Lotus Sutra, and I think that's their practice, that they keep saying this all the time. I knew what was the meaning of these four words, but I think they came from the Lotus Sutra.
Yeah, I think you're
So.
right. And the thing about the Lotus Sutra is it's the sutra that in which the Buddha gives instructions for meditation. And I mean, it's this big elaborate thing that goes on a whole long, it's long, but it's basically the Buddha giving instructions for meditation and directing it to everyone, not only monastics or people in his. That everyone can awaken, lay people and other people and everything. And the Pure Land thing, yeah, I can't remember what it is. If you said it, I would know what it is. The translation, I don't know. Yeah, I
It's
think.
four words. Is I think it's only four words, and they come, of course, from this original, but that it's a, well, it's a mantra that they keep on saying that instead of counting the breath or something, they have this all. And then the other day I was checking this, that's, and I think that it was that I heard that this came from the Lotus Sutra, so I was checking with you. But in fact, the internet, you even can listen to different styles of saying it, and if you stay some time with that, it's really very interesting, I may say. Because it can go slow and go very quick. I suggest you to have a look. I mean, for those who are interested in this, on YouTube or something, because I listened to four variations or two or three variations of it, and it's very powerful in a way.
Yeah.
May
But
I just n note in passing that this is the second time today that somebody has talked to me about the Lotus Sutra, and the other person was not a Buddhist, but mentioned this practice because their mother had it or something, which I just find really adorable. This is Lotus Sutra Day.
interesting.
But isn't this what Tina Turner thing is? That was her practice.
Well, she's dead, but I think,
No, I
yeah.
don't, but it's yes, it was Tina Turner.
Yeah. And I see Tiago has shared the Japanese version. I don't know what it means in English or in Sanskrit or whatever, but if somebody said it, I would say, oh yeah, that's right, that's it.
Yeah, Nam Myoho Renge Kyo Ryo, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, the power of well, and that's Thich Nhat Hanh's phrases are supposed to be like that as well, that you just repeat them, like a mantra or something. Okay, we're about out of time, so I guess we'll stop here and chant our other mantras.